Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Causes or Cures. I'm Dr. Eakes, your host, and thanks for joining in. If you are a regular subscriber, awesome. If you're new, I hope you consider subscribing and sticking around. All right. How much do you sleep at night? Did you ever wonder how your sleep duration impacts your health? There's been so much research in this area to the point that sleep is now considered vital. It's a necessity for good health. You can't skip it, right? Today's episode will focus on new research showing how short sleep, or sleeping too little, increases our risk for type 2 diabetes, and how eating a healthy diet won't help reduce that risk. This is interesting because a lot of people think they can control early onset type 2 diabetes or pre-type 2 diabetes or help slow its progression via exercise and a healthy diet. And while that's true, it's so interesting that a healthy diet, at least how they defined a healthy diet in this study, may not help you nearly as much if you aren't getting the proper number of Z's. Hours of sleep at night. My guest today is Dr. Deanna Noga, and she is going to talk about her research on the relationship between sleep, diet, and risk of type 2 diabetes. She is a researcher in Sweden right now and does a lot of work on sleep and health, and she'll tell you more about what she does in the podcast. She'll also explain the theories as to why short sleep is a risk factor for type 2 diabetes. And also, this is interesting, the role exercise may play as a preventive factor if, for some reason, you can't get enough sleep at night. And for those of you that are a little more nerdy or scientific, it's okay. I will link to her published study in the podcast description so you can check that out. All right, so let's connect to Dr. Deanna here and hear what she has to say. All right, everybody, we are connecting today to Dr. Deanna Noga. And before we dive into her research on sleep duration diet and type 2 diabetes, which is a trending topic here in the US and certainly globally, Deanna, thanks for joining in to the podcast. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work you do?
So thank you for inviting me. I am from the northeast of Brazil, a very beautiful city called Natal. I did all my studies in Brazil as well. So I have a bachelor in biomedicine. Then I did master and PhD in psychobiology with emphasis in neurophysiology. And in 2019, I moved to Sweden, to the Uppsala University in Sweden, to continue my research. So I came to a postdoc position. And before, up to this first postdoc position, I worked a lot with animals, actually, not so much human research. So it was more animal behavior and some neuropharmacological modulations. But then in 2022, I joined the lab that I'm now. So I decided I needed a change and I changed subject, I changed everything. So now I'm doing sleep research in humans. So, and I'm part of the lab of Dr. Christian Benedict and in the Department of Pharmaceutical Biosciences. So our main focus is basically how sleep can modulate health outcomes.
All right. And how do you like living in Sweden from Brazil?
It's quite different, I have to say. Northeast of Brazil is very warm. We don't have that many variation during seasons, so it's usually very stable. Sweden is quite the opposite of that. So the seasons are very, very marked, and the winter is very cold and has very little light. So I'm very happy that we are already going to spring. But yes, a very different place. But I'm adapting. It has a lot of good things as well.
Yeah, it's always hard to make a jump to a different country and different culture and that kind of thing.
Yes, for sure.
And I've never been to Brazil. Been to Sweden, never been to Brazil, but it's on my list to go.
It's very nice to visit, I have to say. We have very, it's a very, very beautiful place, very beautiful people, and
Yeah.
also very good food.
Ah, oh, there you go. That's all I need. Good weather and good food. All right, so back to business here. So sleep duration, diet, and type 2 diabetes. We know that type 2 diabetes is a growing problem, and particularly we're seeing it in younger populations, which is concerning. Can you talk a little bit about how you conducted your study?
Yeah, so I agree with you. Type 2 diabetes is a very alarming problem right now because before, I mean, it's still more common among the people with middle age, let's say 45, 55. But we have this increasing trend in younger people, and it's very concerning because then they have the disease for more time, so they are more susceptible to complications. And also, if you think economically, you are affecting more people in the workforce. So you will even have this added burden. So our study specifically used data from the UK Biobank. So the idea of the UK Biobank, they invited around half a million people in the UK. And these people went to several places there between 2006 and 2011, and they went through a very comprehensive assessment. So they answered a lot of questions about their lifestyle, where they lived, if any of medical history, and they also had blood collected. So it was a very comprehensive assessment. And they also agreed to have their medical records linked to the biobank. So, you know that in the UK, you have the national health system. So, basically, every time they go to the doctor and then someone says, okay, this person was diagnosed with, then they give a code, the ICD code, and this is sent back to the biobank. So, with this, we can ask this data to the UK Biobank, and this allows us to make correlations. So, people that had this behavior or this characteristic during the baseline had a higher or a lower chance of developing, in our case, type 2 diabetes over the period of time since. So, in our case, more or less 13 years. So, for our specific analysis in this publication, we were interested in the interaction between short sleep and diet. With the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So we divided them in groups of sleep duration. And in our case, we're talking about self-reported sleep duration. So they answer a question, how many hours is sleep per day? And we had groups that were what we call normal sleep duration. So from 7 to 8, that's the recommended sleep duration. Then we have people who slept 6 hours, people who slept 5 hours, and then people who slept 3 to 5 hours per day. And then in the diet side, we based it on a previous publication. And basically, we divided them in using a population median split to say that people that eat more fruits, vegetables, and fish and eat less processed meat or red meat get higher scores than people who do the opposite. So, who eat a low amount of fruits, veggies, and fish and eat a high concentration of red meat and processed meat. So, with this, we made a score. 0 was the worst, and 5 was the best. And we combined these two things with the risk of developing type 2 diabetes to analyze this data. Of course, we also have to clean this data. So in the end, we don't have this half a million people in our final analysis because we have to remove everyone that didn't answer some of the questions that we are interested on. We focus on people with short sleep. So anyone that slept more than 9 hours was not included in this analysis. We also removed people that already had diabetes when the baseline was done. So this left us with around a quarter of a million people that had between 38 and 71 years of age, and more or less 52% were women.
Okay, so it's an adult population. Everyone's in their 30s or above, basically. And the people who sleep more than 9 hours a day, I don't know how, like, what they do, but I kind of envy them. I know they say that you could sleep too much, but I do kind of envy those people.
I am the possibility of doing that, but not doing it because long sleep is also associated with several problems. But yes, I envy the availability of sleep.
Okay, so that was a great summary in terms of how you guys did your study. Can you describe some of the main findings for us?
So, if I had to say the main finding of the study is that adopting a healthy diet or healthy eating regimen may not reduce the risk of developing type 2 diabetes that is associated with short sleep. So basically, you cannot compensate short sleep with eating healthy. Of course, considering the diet that the components of the diet that we evaluated, but this is a first study showing that, okay, diet might not be enough to compensate for short sleep.
That's
So, of
huge.
course,
That's huge.
yeah.
Because a lot of
So, of
people think
course,
diet is so powerful. So, anyways, just
yeah.
loosen up,
No,
listeners.
yeah, it's true. So we actually thought it would be. So for the results, what we found was, okay, we saw again that short sleep is linked to proven risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So this is not new per se. This was shown before. We also showed that this diet that we showed that we investigated here protected by itself, so reduced the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. But then it was not enough to compensate for the risk that's associated with sleep. So there was no interaction between diet and sleep there. And that's new. That's the novelty here, and it's interesting, right? So it's a bit against the general expectation, I have to say, right? So
And you and your team were surprised by that finding.
yeah, we were somewhat surprised by that because the original. I mean, if we think that we have two things that go in the opposite direction regarding risk, is more or less logical to hypothesize that one might offset the risk of the other one. But that was not the case. And we have to follow the data, right? And of course, the question would be why? We didn't fully address this here, but we need more investigations to be able to give a definitive answer. One thing we could think of is that why you sleep short. So it might be by choice. It might be by the pressures of our society that you don't have enough time to sleep, but you also might have some underlying disease, another condition that makes you sleep less than 6 hours or less than 7 hours. So it might be that this underlying disease is driving a bit of this effect on the risk of developing type 2 diabetes, and then the diet cannot interfere so much. But we would need more things to be able to say this.
Okay, let me just jump in here. And so when we talk about shorter sleep duration, was there like a cutoff of hours that you saw this at, or did the relationship get stronger the less you slept?
Yes. So we had this a bit dose effect. So if you sleep five, so for 6 hours, with all the confounders that we put there, we didn't have a significant increase. It was a trend. For 5 hours, we had like a 16% increase in the risk. And if it was less than 5 hours, then it was a 40% increase in the risk. So the less you sleep, the worse is the risk. And this is also shown in other studies. So you even have a meta-analysis studies that combine several of these observational studies. And they also show this dose effect. So the less you sleep, the worse is the risk associated there. Of course, just remember when I talk about this percentages, because I see some people getting very scared. So we're talking about a relative risk. So you have normal people have a risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Then the people that sleep less than normal have a increase in this risk. So it's not that they have a 41% chance of developing type 2 diabetes. They have 41% more risk than the people that don't sleep this short.
Relative. No, I know, like whenever you see a headline, right? Like it's very rare that someone gets relative risk versus, absolute risk. And yeah, there's got to be an easier way to explain that to the public, or to the journalist who read. It's like, you have a
It's a bit
41% increase.
tricky.
No, I know,
Yeah,
it's
it's a
so
bit
tricky.
tricky. It's tricky. Sometimes it's tricky to explain to researchers, let alone to people that are not used to these things. But yeah, so you have to think that we had like 250,000 people and only 7,600 developed type 2 diabetes in this time that we evaluated. So it's already 3%. And then among those who slept less than 6 hours had higher risk than those that who didn't. So it's not that, oh, I sleep 5 hours today, then I'm gonna get diabetes. It's not like that. And it's important that we clarify this to people so people don't completely freak out. But yeah, we're talking about increased risk, and it's still important because is another factor that can be influencing your health. And that's what we want to highlight in the sleep is important for your health. So
Absolutely.
take care of it.
And what's interesting too is you didn't look at the population that slept more than 7 to 8 hours.
Yes, so this was a bit of a choice because there are some studies showing that long sleep is also associated with type 2 diabetes, but there are also studies showing that there is no association. And the thing is that a lot of times this long sleep duration is the result of some underlying disease. So with short sleep, we can have this, but there are some estimates that with long sleep, this is one of the main drivers. So other underlying conditions that cause this long sleep.
Which
So
makes sense.
then we don't have that much evidence for long sleep, that for a causal link between long sleep and type 2 diabetes. For short sleep, we have experimental evidence that reducing the time that you spend in bed is associated with a worse glucose metabolism. With long sleep, we don't have that. So then we focus, okay, let's talk more about the one that we have this evidence and then leave this long sleep separate.
And that makes sense. So when we talk about why short sleep is such a strong risk factor for type 2 diabetes, you mentioned a couple things before. You mentioned our lifestyle, we don't sleep a lot. Maybe we're on our phones,
Yeah.
Instagramming, Facebooking, fighting on Twitter, whatever it may be. We have shift work, we're up studying, we don't emphasize sleep. And then you mentioned a couple underlying diseases, perhaps sleep apnea,
Yes.
interrupted sleep.
So
Are there any other theories as to why short sleep is such a strong risk factor for type 2 diabetes?
yeah, so first, why we sleep short? And you mentioned very well the main drivers of this. So we live in this bit crazy society nowadays that you need to be connected all the time. We need to answer instantly. And we have our phones on our face until right up to the time we go to bed. And we know that the phones have blue lights and so on. And this affects how our brain, it affects the mechanisms that we need to start sleeping. And we also have a lot of shift workers that are needed, and then this unfortunately messes a lot with their circadian rhythms and then affects their sleep. And we can have some underlying diseases. So one that happens a lot is the obstructive sleep apnea. That's when the muscle that supports the soft tissue on your throat and your tongue and palate, relax a bit. And then in the middle of the night, you stop breathing, basically, because the airway is closed there. And there's an estimation that 1 billion people suffer from this, and almost and 80% of those people don't know it. So
1 billion.
because, yes, there's
Wow.
a recent study showing this.
Sleep apnea. And that's the one that's usually diagnosed by if you sleep with a partner, because they might hear you snoring, right? Or not
And they
diagnosed,
might
but
hear,
detected.
and you have even to separate, because there's the snoring, and there is the actually stop breathing. It's a bit
Yes.
so you might snore and not have ulcer,
Right.
but it's a very common disease, let's say, in lack of a better word, and it affects a lot the sleep. So it reduces the sleep duration. But it also can affect specific moments of your sleep. Because in this study, we were talking about sleep duration. That's what we had access to, right? But we also have, during your sleep, we have different sleep stages, right? We have REM sleep, we have non-REM sleep. And during this non-REM sleep, we still have the deep sleep, right? And there are some studies in the lab showing that having the obstructive sleep apnea during REM sleep seems to be more important for affecting negatively your glucose metabolism than during the non-REM sleep. So you'll not only have the duration of the sleep, but also when it happens. Because all the obstructive sleep apnea that I'm saying also now, it not only reduces the time you spend in bed, but it also fragments your sleep, which is also very complicated for your health.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. So when you stop breathing, what stage of sleep you're in matter could matter be a significant
Yes.
factor. Interesting.
Yes.
Huh.
So that's because there are some studies. So, okay, we have these factors that drive a bit why you sleep short, and then the relationship between short sleep and type 2 diabetes was investigated in some experimental studies. But then you need to have in mind that they cannot directly investigate type 2 diabetes. They will investigate the metabolism of glucose, because I cannot induce diabetes in someone, and I cannot keep them in this experimental condition long enough for them to develop type 2 diabetes. But what these experimental studies show, basically what they do, is they get a group of people, usually most of them are healthy young individuals, and then they keep these people either one day without sleep, a complete day without sleep, or 3 to 5 days, or maximum 1 week, with reduced sleep. So they are allowed a maximum of 4 and a half hours of sleep. And then after this intervention, they will measure something related to the glucose metabolism. Most of the times they do this oral glucose tolerance test. So basically you drink a glucose solution and then you measure the glucose levels over time, so you see how they respond. But there are also other measures they make. And then these studies have shown that you have reduced sensitivity to insulin after sleep deprivation in both general, also looking at tissue. So they looked at the muscular tissue, they looked at the adipose tissue, and both of them had reduced insulin sensitivity. You also have higher, this sleep deprivation also increases your cortisol levels, and cortisol causes the release of restored glucose, and then your glucose level go up. They also increase the sympathetic tone in your body. So, and this is also associated with releasing some of the glucose and also producing glucose on your liver. So you have several mechanisms that are associated with short sleep that could be responsible for the development, more or less, of type 2 diabetes.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So there's a connection there You can't really say anything causal, but and just to summarize for our listeners, you have increased insulin resistance, and then so the sugar is not going to go into the cells, so it's going to
Cells
the sugar levels are going to stay high
stay
in your
high.
blood,
Exactly.
and then increase
And
cortisol, which is the stress hormone. I think folks are familiar with that. So
exactly. And
there might
the
be
thing about
something.
cortisol,
Yeah, go on.
the thing about cortisol is that it's a stress related hormone, right?
Right.
And it's also released when you are in this state that, if you remember our very early physiology class, the flight or
Right.
fight.
Fight or
So
flight.
you need energy. And one thing the cortisol does is actually we have some stored glucose in our body. What it does, it just releases this in the system. So it will increase your glucose levels. And the
Okay.
similar, more or less, thing will happen with, when I say increases the sympathetic tone, it increases your adrenaline, and it will
Right.
have more or less similar effect. So
Right.
basically, it's associated with more sugar in your blood and less insulin, or at least not less insulin, but less response to insulin. So
Right.
the sugar will stay there.
The cells are not opening their door to insulin. I like
To glucose,
yeah,
yeah.
I not that our cells have doors, but I just like to
No, yeah.
visualize everything.
Yes.
But no, I think that's interesting. And I think chronic cortisol is it's like a chronic stress, right? Is it safe to,
Yes.
yeah, chronic stress, which, okay, so given type 2 diabetes is a major public health concern, I suppose we could probably also call short sleep a public health concern at
A
this,
concern.
yeah,
Yes.
at this point. What do you think, or what would you say are the main public health implications of your research?
So we want to, what we are saying here is, once again, sleep matters, right? We have this thing, especially with the idea that we have to be productive all the time and so on. Some people started with the idea that sleep is a waste of time, right? I often hear this, oh, study when they are sleeping, work when they are sleeping, and then you're going to be better. And it's not very true. It's actually very wrong. Sleep is extremely important for your health. So, and not only, I mean, we're talking about diabetes, but it's for so many other things, including your mood and also your performance, your cognitive performance, your physical performance, and so on. So we're not trying to say, oh, again, you don't sleep, then you get diabetes. We're saying again that sleep matters. Pay attention to it. You should try the best you can to have a good sleep. And it matters so much that sometimes it cannot be compensated by something else. So it cannot, it seems at least that it may not be compensated by diet. Of course, there are other types of diet that might do this, but these more common things, like, okay, I'll eat more veggies, I'll eat more fruits, and so on, don't seem to do it. Of course, there are other things that might do it. So there are other studies showing that physical activity may offset a bit this risk associated with short sleep. So it's important that we say that. So we had two, let's say, main studies showing this. We had one actually with the UK Biobank, but it's a bit different from ours because they use the accelerometry data. So basically, one quarter, one fifth of the people from the UK, the original UK Biobank group, they came, I think, 5 years later, and they accept to wear a device for 1 week. And this device is basically measuring how active they are. And with this, they can also track how long they slept in a more objective way. So it doesn't depend on their own answers. It's a more objective measurement of their sleep and also of their physical activity during the day. And this one showed that people with short sleep, again, had higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes, didn't see the same for long sleep. In this case, they had both. But they saw that if you had short sleep, but had a moderate or high level of physical activity, then this increased risk associated with short sleep was not there anymore. So it seems that physical activity could compensate for this type 2 diabetes risk associated with short sleep.
That's
And there was
interesting.
another study also in this case with a small group of young men where they had these normal sleepers and then short sleepers and then short sleepers with high intensity interval training heat. And then the exercise was this exercise, let's say high intensity, was enough to also prevent the effects that were seen in short sleep duration. So yes, there are some things that might offset. Diet might not be the one, but the main message is sleep matters.
Sleep
So
matters.
try as much as you can, of course, in the helm of your possibility, to improve your sleep. So try to create a routine, try to sleep more or less in the same hour, try to have a moment where you start to wind down. So I'm not watching too many things or with my phone on my face and then immediately turn everything off and expect that I go to sleep. So try to create these routines.
Like
And
a sleep ritual.
even if you strive to do that and you're still not managing to sleep, maybe you should ask for advice from a medical doctor or from someone specialized on this that can, because it might be that you have some underlying cause that you are not aware of, and you might be able to treat that and
That's a
improve
good
your
point.
sleep.
That's a good point. I have a sleep ritual. I liked what you said there, because you're so right. It's not a badge of honor. Too little sleep is not a badge of honor. It's not like, oh, you're such a hard worker, you know, wow, you didn't sleep. Look at all this product. That's BS. We have to sleep,
Exactly.
and you're much healthier in the long run. I just had a researcher on to talk about the link between too little sleep and cognitive decline. So, like as you said, there's
Yeah.
so many other reasons, but for my sleep ritual, I do. I put on pajamas and then I make sure like everything's off, like phone's off, TV's off, like no distraction, and just kind of honor that time when I'm supposed to sleep. And I didn't used to do that.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
it's important because the thing is, we got so used to do these things, to have the phones and so on, that we didn't realize what they were doing. And then we started to see more people with difficulty to fall asleep, more people with short sleep. So we start to look at it and, okay, we need to calm down our brains to help it go into the sleep. And the other thing that people often forget, and it's like, as much as possible, your bedroom should be bedroom, not TV room, not playing room, just bedroom.
Kitchen,
So
office, yeah.
exactly. So our brains are very associative machine. So if it's just a bedroom, we will associate that this place is a place I go to sleep, and this helps you to go to sleep. So it's also, I mean, of course, I know that's not possible for everyone, but maybe the idea of a large screen on your bedroom is not the best one.
I was laughing because I'm in New York City and just thinking of all the ways people sleep here. It's
Oh yeah,
like,
I can understand that.
yeah. No, but I love that. And then even and the lights too, for you need dark for the melatonin to come out, the vampire
Exactly.
hormone,
So
which helps, which is your friend and helps you sleep. So,
sleep. Yeah.
I wanted to go back
It's
really quick when you mentioned the physical activity might be a preventative factor to too little sleep. And you mentioned high intensity interval training. I think that's what the acronym stands for.
yeah.
Did you look at, or could you talk about, was there specific types of exercise? Was it cardio or resistance training, or we're not sure?
They
You may not know
only
offhand,
talk
sorry.
about, no, yeah, no, they talk about the load that they had. So they describe it as they needed to reach like 90% of their maximum, the peak load of exercise. And I think they did this for 3 minutes, and then they had a 75 seconds where they would go down to 60% of the maximum load. So they actually, in this one, they explained very clearly which was the exercise that they used. Because there were some other studies with less intense exercise that didn't show this effect. So some of them use it only the 60% and couldn't see it. But for the one that was the ones from the UK Biobank, they mentioned that what they call moderate physical activity. Basically, they actually did what the World Health Organization recommends as moderate physical activity. And they say that if you go for that, you already reduce the risk. So it will, the idea is as many as possible, stay active, because even if you don't fully offset this with, let's say, lower level of physical activities, it already helps. So again, we're preaching the same things, right? Sleep
Yeah, I
and
know.
exercise.
I know, it seems so simple and then nobody does
Yeah.
it.
No.
Okay, exercise. So a little bit of cardio, a little bit of resistance
Cardio
training, just
resistance.
move around,
Yes.
lift some weights,
Move around.
move around, shake a little.
Move
Okay.
around, yeah. I know that for US and Brazil, that's not so much about walking to places, right? We don't do that car everywhere. So here, Europe at least has this more, it's more widespread to cycle and walk, and that helps already a lot. But of course, the, let's say, directed physical exercise, so I'm going to put this half an hour to or 1 hour to actually engage in active physical exercise is important.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that because I was just talking to someone. They were like, "Well, Aaron, why don't you ride your bike in the bike lane in New York City?" I'm like, "Because I'm not suicidal. Like, I just don't want to risk it because it's not." But if you go to Germany, and you see their bike lanes, you're like, "Okay, that's bike friendly."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
If
so.
and if they have bike lanes, right? Because in my
Oh
city,
yeah.
for my Natal, for example, you barely have them.
In
And some
Brazil.
of them you have to, yeah, and some of them you have to share with buses. So I
Oh,
don't know.
fun. Yeah.
This thing
That sounds appealing.
is completely different from Uppsala, for example, where you can basically go anywhere in a bike. And people here bike in the winter with snow. It doesn't matter. They're biking
June.
all
Okay. I
year
didn't
long.
realize that. So Brazil is not a walking country for the majority.
For the majority of what I know, no.
No.
It's a lot.
Okay.
It's Brazil tends to try to mirror the US a lot. So we have this car culture very strong
Ah,
there.
okay. Okay. It's not working out well for us. So just FYI, Brazil.
Yeah. We don't learn from other people's
Yeah.
mistakes.
The cars are easy and nice, but we got to
Yeah.
watch ourselves. Deanna, thank you so much for this. I guess my last question here, what future research are you working on? Are you doing things similar in this area or something new?
Yeah, so we have some things more or less similar. So we still have some other questions with this biobank data regarding sleep, diet, and different health outcomes, and also regarding people that work night shifts or not, or I mean, working shifts, night shifts, and normal or working time. Because besides the sleep, we also have this thing, the circadian rhythm. So, it's important for us to try as much as possible to keep our sleep schedule similar during the days and other factors that influence our rhythms. And shift work is kind of the enemy of all that. So we also want to investigate some things with shift work. We will probably next semester start another project. In this case, involving actually experimental data. So we will have people and we'll track their sleep for at least 2 weeks and also track their glucose levels and investigate relationships there. But in this time, with objective measurement for a longer period of time and also a measurement that allows us to check this sleep staging that we didn't have, for example, in this data.
This is great
And
stuff.
yeah, and we are finishing one project, but this one is a bit, I mean, the only relationship in this case is sleep, because it's a project working with sleep deprivation as well. In this case, 1 night of full sleep deprivation, but in investigating the interaction of the menstrual cycle with this sleep deprivation, because that's another thing that we often don't do is like investigate women, they're not taking contraceptive pills. So normal cycling women, and how this hormonal variation that we have in the menstrual cycle might affect other things. So we are trying to investigate this a bit now.
And it's so nice to for you know like the research to kind of come out now. You know, I just and I had someone, a researcher, former colonel from the military on, and they talked they he was describing this sort of new holistic approach to soldier readiness and fitness, and sleep is now a critical component of that. And
Finally.
yeah, and when I was at I went to the military academy. We were always told sleep is a crutch, sleep is a crutch, you know, and they would wake us up during training and stuff like that. And so it's so nice to see it kind of come full circle, because I remember being sleep deprived and I was miserable, like depressed, like just, you know,
Exactly. It
anxious.
affects you in so many ways. And
And
it's
it's
also a thing that I think is important for healthcare and everything, because
yeah.
when you do this, at least when in these experiments, for example, sometimes I had to stay awake all night with the person that's participating in the study, and then, of course, they do it once. I had to do more than once for sure. And at some point, I was like, "Man, imagine that I would be making life or death decisions on someone else for someone else, and this state is not the
Yeah.
best, I have to say."
That's a really good point. In fact, when I don't sleep very well, I always tell myself, do not make any big decisions today. I just don't,
Exactly,
because
because
I can notice it in myself. Like, you're not 100%. You could be like a little bit depressed right now, cognitive declined, whatever. Don't make any big decisions. But you're so right. And I do feel for the shift workers though. And life was so much easier when you could just wake up when the sun rose up and like go to bed when the sun when it gets dark. Like, it
yeah,
was
it
so
was
simple,
easier
but
for sure.
we had to go and complicate everything.
I don't know in the north of Sweden, but yeah, in the rest of the
Yeah.
world.
Anyway, this was great. Thank you so much for your time
Thank you.
today, connecting. And yeah, this was very informative. So thank
Thank
you
you.
so much. And nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your day there.
Yeah, I have experiments tonight, so
Oh no. So you actually have to stay up all night?
yeah. And then
Oh.
today I don't stay up, I sleep. But then yeah, I have from
It's
eight
kind of
until
ironic, isn't
noon.
it? It's kind of
Yeah,
ironic.
yeah,
You're
yeah.
you can
Yeah.
be you can
Is
be your own
there?
case study.
We always joke that sleep researchers are the worst sleepers ever, but yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. Maybe we can talk and write up your own case study. I'm happy we could talk about that on
Yeah.
the podcast too. All right, thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining in for today's episode. Let me know what you thought on Facebook, Instagram, or X, or email me, erin@bloomingwellness.com. And don't forget to come back and check out more episodes. Subscribe, share, and the link to subscribe to my newsletter, which I send out once a month, is posted in the podcast description. Going forward, guest authors will be contributing pieces to the newsletter, so take a gamble and subscribe. If you don't like it, you can always unsubscribe. That's the beauty of it. Okay, and now it's time for the closing quote from the great cat lover and writer. Some of you know him more as a writer, Ernest Hemingway. Here it is. I love sleep. My life has a tendency to fall apart when I'm awake, you know? All right, that's it, and see you here next time. Bye for now.